We are learning Shmuel Bet. We're going to be finishing the seventh parak today. We are up to Pasuk Yud Ches, which is page 246 in our packets. This parak, which we saw, this is only the fourth week, we'll finish it up this week, began with David with high hopes. I'm going to build a base in Mikdash. And he went to Nassim. He went to Nathan the prophet, and without even having to consult God, he said, "Of course you're going to be the one doing it. Who else? You're the man." And Hashem, for numerous psukim up until Pasuk Yud Zayin, which is where we concluded last week, basically was the nevuah, the prophecy, which Nathan had to deliver, and he did verbatim to David, saying two basic messages. On one hand, good news and bad news. The bad news is you're not going to build the Beis Mikdash, but the good news is you'll have a son that will, and even more than that, you'll be creating a dynasty, a legacy which will continue for generation to generation. And not only that, not only with this Beis Mikdash, but ultimately with Mashiach ben David, with the third Beis Mikdash as well. So now the rest of this parak is David in tefillah, praying to Hashem. Actually, as we're going to see, as we find through all of our tefillos, there is an actual pattern. We don't just immediately start asking for things. Instead, we first praise Hashem. We show our appreciation, greatness that Hashem did, all the things that Hashem has done. And that's what David is going to do here, as he's going to be involved in his own Shemona Esrei, if you will, his own tefillah, his own prayers. And that's what we're going to see right now. Pasuk Yud Ches. So, V'yavo HaMelech David. So, David, King David, went. V'yeshev ne'Hashem. He sat before Hashem. V'yomer, and he said the following. This is how he began his prayer. Mi anochi Hashem Elokim. Who am I? Who am I, God? Mi basi. Who is my household? Look at where I came from. Ki haviosani ad ohalom, that you have brought me to this present state. After all, look at my humble beginnings. Look at the person that I was. I was as simple as a shepherd. The fact that you made me into a king is far above anything that I could have ever expected. And therefore, I'm showing my great appreciation and hakaras hatov to you for doing above and beyond. So, beginning with the words of the Radak, and I probably don't have a lot underlined, but nonetheless, I'm going to try my best to show you where we're up to. Pasuk Yud Ches in the Radak, which is the third line, we're not going to see the whole thing, just the first line, asks the question. The question is that if it's true that David is now starting to daven, Vayavo, so David goes and he begins his davening, so what does a person generally do? You stand. In fact, the Shemona Esrei, another name for the Shemona Esrei is the
Amidah.
The Amidah, because that's how you're supposed to stand. You have to know before whom you are standing. You're supposed to stand. For some reason, when it comes to David, it says Vayeshev Lifnei Hashem, that he was sitting and he was davening, so wouldn't it be more appropriate? He should be standing. So this is what the Radak points out. The Radak tells us that first of all, when it says, what do you mean Lifnei Hashem? Hashem's everywhere. So what does it mean that he was Lifnei Hashem? It means Lifnei Ha'aron. So he was in front of the Aron, and this is the place where he chose to go to daven. Mikan Samchu Rabbu Seinu Zal, and from here our sages teach us, quoting the Gemara in Sota, She'en Yeshiva Ba'azara El Malchei Beis David Bilvad. The truth is, no one is supposed to sit during davening, and even more so, if a person goes into the Beis HaMikdash, which is no Beis HaMikdash yet, but the fact that the Aron was there, that's as equivalent, as close as you're ever going to get to having a Beis HaMikdash, no one is allowed to sit. You don't just sit, relax. You have to be standing. The only exception is Beis David. If you come from Malchus Beis David, then and only then are you allowed to sit in the sanctuary. In fact,
is that just the king can sit or anybody from Beis David?
King.
So
king.
Malchus.
King. That's the Kodesh Kodashim. This is not referring to the Kodesh Kodashim. It's true that Aron is generally placed in the Kodesh Kodashim, but there was no Beis HaMikdash. So the Aron was not put... If you remember, David wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash because the Aron, he felt, was not in its proper place. It was in a tent. But that's not called Kodesh Kodashim. The Kodesh Kodashim is once you build the structure, the Mishkan, or the Beis HaMikdash, and you build these rooms... So the inner chamber is the Kodesh Kodashim. So that there wasn't. And therefore he was allowed to go there, at least at this point. You're right, once the Beis HaMikdash is there, David, a king, cannot even walk into Kodesh Kodashim. It's true, only the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur. But he was allowed to do so. And not only that, but he sat. And in fact, there is a king by the name of Yerubbaal ben Nevat, who got a pretty bad rap, a very bad reputation. And one of the things that he did, he's famous, was he put idols in different locations. And what he also did is he did not allow people to be Ola Regel, to go up during the pilgrimage festivals of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot. And there was actually two kings at the time, much like we saw in the beginning of the Sefer, that it was Yerubbaal and another person by the name of Rechavam. Now, Yerubbaal did not come from Beis David. He was not from Malchus Beis David. And the real reason why he did not want to have other people Ola Regel, because he would have gone too, and they would have seen the other king sitting, and then Yerubbaal, who would be not allowed to sit, because he did not come from the house of David, they would look at him standing, and they'd say, oh, this king is better than this king, and then he would end up losing the control and the power. And therefore, for that reason, that's the reason the Gemara says, he said, no one has to go to Yerushalayim anymore. And the reason really why he instituted the idols was not necessarily because he wanted people to worship those idols, but it was because he did not want to relinquish his power and control. But this is the same idea over here. This is the concept that's brought over here, why David was allowed to sit v'yeshev with Nei Hashem. And this idea of sitting versus standing could also be explained in a different manner. That when it comes to the davening, the purpose of the Amida is to show our humility, to show our neva, standing in front of the Almighty, in front of our Creator, who are we? For us to sit down, it shows, you know, too much comfort in front of God. To stand, it's an act of being humbled. And in fact, as we mentioned in numerous other occasions, that we are not allowed to bow down more than four times. But when a king davens, the Shemoneh Esrei, they have to begin bowing, and they're not allowed to get up. They have to remain bowed down throughout the entire Shemoneh Esrei, which is unusual because you never see it, so you don't have any kings, until the very end is finally when he gets up. And the idea is because a king is more susceptible to gaiva, haughtiness, and therefore he needs to break that by constantly humbling himself. But what do we find in this pasuk? This pasuk shows that David did not have any of those problems. David was an anav. He was humble. And that's what he says in this pasuk. Mi anochi? Who am I? Who am I? And therefore, the idea of having to stand didn't apply to David, and therefore to Malchus Beis Tov in future generations. Because he was an individual that didn't need to stand in front of God in order to sense humility. He already felt that level of being humble, even without having to stand. So that's another possible approach. Now, if we look further in the Radak, the Radak tells us, which is about skipping a couple more lines, where it begins with the line Umehem Amru, and then there's parentheses Medrash Tehillim. The Radak says, Sheyoshev Atzma B'Tfila, as we just established, that he was actually sitting down while he was davening. Then the Radak says, Mi Anochi, who am I? Says the Radak, what David is really saying, Shehayisi Roy Lamucha, who am I to really be fit to be calling myself a king? Really nothing special. If we jump down a line immediately underneath it, he quotes a Medrash. He says, Mi Anochi V'lo Min Amoni Umoavi Ba'asi. I come from Ammon and Moab, or more specifically Moab. Ad halom, right. Right. Ad halom, up until this point, lodai shiba asiba kahal. It wasn't even enough. Maybe I shouldn't even have entered into kahal Hashem, because the pasuk says lo yavo amoni umuavi b'kahal Hashem, that someone who comes from Moab is not allowed to enter into kahal Hashem. Doesn't mean they're not allowed to convert, but it means they're not allowed to marry someone other than a convert from Ammon and Moab and others as well.
But I don't understand why he would even say that when it was already resolved.
He's just showing how humble he was.
Yeah, but then he is bringing down all his forebears as well, including Ruth.
That's
I don't understand how he's
going to say that. He said it would be baby.
Yes, but he's. This humility is fine for him, but he's also now bringing down his father and his grandfather and all the way back.
He's not thinking in those terms.
What?
He's not thinking in those terms.
Yeah, well, but...
I think, otherwise, I think that he's pointing to all this to show where he could come from, to such a point where he did come from. Look where he did.
Appreciation.
Yeah. He did his appreciation.
And in other words, he's saying, I'm not someone who came from royalty, I'm not someone who came from, you know, such a powerful family. I was from, I'm a Moab, and from Rus. You know, not saying there's anything wrong with Rus. We're going to discuss Rus a little bit more in the next pasuk, actually. But nonetheless, he was saying, I come from a humble background, humble beginnings. Okay, I know that you have a connection to Rus, that's why. One more thought before we move on to the next pasuk, and we'll develop that concept a little bit further. It's brought down another concept when it says the wording of this pasuk that he went vayeshlef ne Hashem, he sat down vayomer, and then he spoke. So on this, the Mishpatos Zahav, and I'll just say it outside, quotes the words of the Yalkut. The Yalkut says that from here we see the obligation of preparation. It's not enough that a person ought to just jump into something. It explains that nowadays, when a person gets an aliyah, you just get an aliyah and some other guy does the whole Torah reading thing. But in the good old days, you were the one that actually read from the Torah itself, right? So it was pretty heavy. And it was brought down a story about Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was given an honor to read from the Torah. He didn't go up. He didn't go up. The great Rabbi Akiva. And on this, and I would imagine he probably knew the Torah cold by heart. But nonetheless, he didn't go up to make a point. And his students went up to him and said, "What's going on? I just heard your name. Why didn't you accept the honor?" And he said, "I learned out from David that this is not the right way. The way that you have to do things is first you have to prepare. But Yavo Melech David, Vayeshev Neshem. First he sat down and he contemplated. He thought, what am I about to do? What am I about to say? And he needed to make those preparations. And then the pasuk says, Vayomer. Then he spoke to God. Just to run into shul and to start davening, at least you're davening. And that's a madrega this nowadays as well. But you're really supposed to sit down and contemplate, think, what am I doing? Why am I here? What? Right. So exactly, right. So, but this is the idea of the greatness of David, that he would not just do things, right? Rather, he would prepare. And the goal in life is to try to emulate this, that we don't just start doing whatever we have to do in anything in life. You have to take it seriously. Because if you don't prepare, it shows you don't really take it seriously.
No, it's not that he's putting them down. It's exactly the opposite. He said, if it wasn't for Hashem, where would I be? If it wasn't for Hashem finding Ruth and
Tamar,
this whole chain of events, where would I be? The humility and appreciation.
Yeah, I can see that.
Sort of like thinking before you speak.
Yeah. Some, yes, which I guess we all have to improve in that area. Some more than others, but you know, what can I say?
What they say about no, before they start diving, they spend a lot of time. Just
it would be no conversation.
Right. Yeah, we all have what to improve in all these areas. But that was That's the message that Rabbi Akiva teaches us from this sentence from David. Okay, let's move on. So, v'tiktan od zos be'enecha Hashem Elokim. There's different ways to read this. You considered even that to be a small matter, something which was insignificant. To me, I thought that was amazing. That you took a person such as myself and lifted them up to such a lofty position. But that v'tiktan, you considered to be insignificant. You considered that not enough. You did so much more. V'tadaber gam el beis abdecha l'meiracho. You also spoke to the house of your servant. You spoke to me, l'meirachok, things which will be in the future, things which are distant from me. Bazos toras adam Hashem Elokim. Is this something in which is the normal way of the pattern of behavior of people? To know what will become of not only myself, but what will happen to my children, to my descendants. That's not something which is normal. Because, you know, we have no crystal ball. We don't know what's going to happen. We can try our best. We can instill proper values to our children. But we can't guarantee that things are going to work out. But when it came to you, Hashem, you told me that my children are going to end up taking over this position. They're going to build a base of Mikdash. And they're going to continue this dynasty forever.
Rabbi, is there any comment on the fact of the two descriptive names of Shem, Adonai Elohim, and all of those sentences?
Yeah, we're going to keep seeing that over and over again. And I didn't see it in any of these commentaries in front of us, but the idea of, on one hand, you could think that David would be upset, because David wanted to build a base of Mikdash, now he can't build a base of Mikdash. But all he's doing is showing his appreciation. Hashem and Elohim are different attributes of God. Right. And therefore he's saying that he's acknowledging both of them together. And he's recognizing that even things which I consider to be great, kind things, I appreciate. And even Elohim, the things which I don't really necessarily appreciate, I'm not so happy with, and I wanted to build a base of Mikdash, but I still understand. I'm willing to accept that as well. So it's like David accepts the whole package, everything that God gives him. But it's certainly worthwhile thinking about. But we're going to see that over and over, almost every single pasuk, the same words.
But he says that he nechbab in hakelim. If it wasn't for Hashem seeing him, nobody else would have ever noticed him, because
right.
That's where he was.
Right.
Hashem only.
Not only that, his own father.
That's it. He was invisible.
To be the one.
Yeah, he's like,
this is the last
him, right.
The invisible
right.
Person.
Right. So, yeah, exactly. So let's look at Rashi. So the way I read the second half of this pasuk was according to the first explanation of Rashi. Rashi says, V'zos taras adam bitmia, which is asked, you're supposed to say it as a question. Roy, is it befitting? Was Vasir Kane Lubasir Badam to tell so much information to a person of flesh and blood that you're telling me all this information of what will be for my children? Dabaracher, another explanation which is really very similar. Asiso li kemosha asiso adam rishon. You've treated me the exact same way that you treated Adam. What did God do for Adam Harishon? That Hashem gave Adam this tremendous vision of the future, of what was going to happen in many future generations. So therefore the reason why the Rashi uses this different spin of why he uses the word Vizos Toras Adam, he's referring to Adam Harishon, that you treated me just like Adam Harishon, that you allowed me to see the future. Now the Medrash explains a little bit differently. Adam can be translated as man versus woman. Because the question was, how did Boaz have the right to marry Rus? After all, the Torah says that you're not allowed to marry someone from Moab. And Rus came from Moab. And the answer was that it's... Right, it's only that she cannot marry a man who comes from Moab. That's what the pasuk says. Lo yavo... Moab. However, the other way around, a man is allowed to marry someone from Moab. A woman from Moab. which shows the greatness of the woman, right? That when it came to a man, we don't want him. But when it came to a woman, even though she came from such a background, she was able to be connected to Klai Yisrael, and therefore wasn't a problem. And therefore, this is how some people read this pasuk. This is how the Medrash reads it, which is a little bit out there, but Vezos Torah Sa'ada means that because there was a Torah, there was a law about a man that allowed...
about the women.
Right, that's the reason why I was fit to become a king, even though Boaz married someone from Moab. But because that's Torah's Adam, that he was allowed to do so, therefore I was able to elevate myself to a different, to ultimately become a king. So that's how it's interpreted. But again, you can look at it as Rus was a woman, you know, she came from this, from Moab, and this is where I came from, and you can have a negative slant. But the reality is that can't be, and I spoke about this last Shavuos, that we read Megillas Rus on Shavuos about Kabbalah Satora, because if you study Rus, she was actually the ultimate Jew. If you study the type of person that she was the person that we all need to emulate. And one of the things that she says is that she says, Bashir Timosi Amos, that wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you die, I will die. She was inseparable to the Jewish traditions. And basically what that means, as the Mefarshim explains, is that she had complete Mesiras Nefesh. That it was as though that her own existence was insignificant compared to this connection to God, to Hashem. And therefore, this is also what David ended up becoming as well. He was a person that also had the same idea of a lack of a sense of self. That he said, Mi Anochi, who am I? So therefore that's the same connection to Rus. That it was because that he came from such a great person, such as Rus, who was able to have this great relationship with Hashem and not look so haughty within herself, that's the way that he was able also to have this level of humility because of his background. Not despite it, but because of it. Maybe if he would have come from an environment where everyone was, you know, very arrogant and powerful, so maybe then he would not have been able to been fit to be a king. But because he came from the humble background, those were that was the ability for him to be able to become the person that he became. So, all right, let's move on. Pasuk Chaf. Uma Yosef David od ledaber elecha. What more can David say to you about this? So he's speaking about himself, kind of like Elmo does, right? But this is David. He's saying, "Who I am, David. Who else can I say to you? What else can I say?" V'ataya data es abdecha Hashem Elokim. We keep saying those words, and you know your servant God. Yadata Mesuz Sion says in Ahava, you know me, you love me. Mesuz Sion says it's also a lashon of rachamim. You care about me, you have compassion, concern for me. You know me. So what does that mean? I'll tell you that this abdecha. So there's two explanations that we can see. Let's see Rashi on the very top of page 248. Nesati lo kol tzarchei. You give me everything that I needed. Right? So he's saying that you know that anything that I ever needed, you gave to me. You always took care of me. The Radak says something quite remarkable. You know, levav abdecha. You know the heart. You know what's inside of myself. So even though there's a million things I can say to you, I don't have the capacity, the ability to articulate myself, to share all the things that I'm feeling. But you know. You truly know how I feel inside. Sometimes we don't have the words. And this is also, you can say this not just with our relationship with ourselves to God. It could be our interpersonal relationships between man and fellow man, benon u'chavero. Sometimes we care for one another, but we just don't have the words. We don't know exactly what to say. And this is how David is saying, "All I can pray a million words, a million prayers, it won't be enough, but you know really how I'm feeling." And in fact, this is a Gemara that tells us this idea, is that in the beginning of the Shemoneh Esrei, we say, Kel Gadol Gibor V'Hanora. We start labeling the great attributes of God. Gadol Gibor V'Hanora. He's great, he's mighty, he's awesome, powerful. And the Gemara says you're not allowed to mention any more than that. They only instituted those three and nothing more. Even though you may want to say more, you cannot do so. And in fact, the Gemara gave a story that there was a person that just continued to go on and on about the praises of Hashem. And then the sage afterwards turned to him and said, what, that's it? You have nothing else to say? Sometimes more
is less.
And less is more. Right. So therefore, this is what David is saying as well. I could continue to go on, but it's just not going to be enough. And therefore, look within. You know how I'm feeling. You know my how my relationship with you. Okay. Pasuk Chavav. Ba'avor divarcha. It was because of your words. Ukilibcha. That which was, anthropomorphically speaking, in your heart. This is your feelings, God. Asisas kol hagadol hazos. That's the reason why all these great things happen to me. Lohodia es avdecha. To let things be known to your servant. You let all this information about what will happen to my children, you let everything, you told everything to your servant. You didn't have to. I wasn't deserving of it. But nonetheless, you did this. It wasn't coming to me. It was a complete act of chesed. And this is really, as the Radak really nails it on the head, he says this in Pasuk of Aleph, in the Radak, just going to say like a few words, where it says, Bavur divorecha v'kilvavecha, if you skip two lines in the Radak, he says, ki eneni roi l'kach. Ki eneni roi l'kach. Those four words I'm going to say in the Radak. I'm not fit for any of this. Everything that I received is above and beyond that which I ever deserved. And if a person would have that type of an attitude, not just with our relationship with ourselves and God, but in all matters, the way that we deal with people, is in any royal akach, that I don't deserve even what I have. I don't deserve. I'm thankful for what I have because it's above and beyond that which I really need. That a person would not take things for granted. A person would not be so stubborn and expect certain things and demand certain things. You know, things have to be going my way. I'm very angry if people speak to me beneath me. You should be speaking this way. You have to show me honor and respect. David, the great David HaMelech, said, "Ki eneni roi l'kach." I'm not fit to any of these things. And we know the opposite is Haman. Haman was a person who had everything, and yet when he had one little Jew, this nobody by the name of Mordechai, a Yehudi, didn't bow down, he turns to his wife and says, "Kol zeinu shavalin. All this is nothing." What do you mean? He has everything you can imagine. His power, the second to the king, he was invited to all these parties, he had everything you can imagine, wealth. But one little thing is not going my way, I'm angry. It just bothered him. He was filled with fury. It's because he had the opposite feeling as David. David's attitude was, "Ki enenu roi l'kach." Whatever I have is more than I really deserve. And that's a tremendous approach if a person could somehow really internalize that. That's really the idea of being samech b'chelko, being happy with what you have. Being, okay, so you have more than me. Who cares? I'm happy with my lot in life because it's really more than I really deserve. If David would say that, certainly we should not feel that we deserve more than we have. But that's certainly a madrega, certainly a level that we have to reach. In fact, we're going to see this also next week. We'll talk about it later. Yeah.
I can see, I definitely believe in it, appreciating what you have.
Yes.
And being thankful for what you have.
Yeah.
But I don't think that to say I don't deserve what I have, that is like just you, as a not a very confident kind of person, and not a person who's able to function really properly. I mean, if you feel you've worked hard and you're a very good person, then you deserve what you've got.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, I mean, you
took it to a point before you got to that point of hard. Really, when he was quite young, where you had a chance at a history. Now I have some sort of, but he saw something in which I think is the Anubis. That's what he saw in there. That's what Hashem saw in
there. Right, right.
And which we talked about before with
I mean, I don't think you have to beat yourself up and say, oh, you know, I deserve, I should be in a cardboard box outside, you know. But the idea is not just to say Kieni Roy Lekach, but it's to show your Hakaras HaTov, your appreciation. This is what we talked about maybe a month ago, like we mentioned before about Dayenu, right? That Dayenu is not that we have to thank. Oh, that would have been enough. And then we'd have been stuck in the desert. If he didn't give us the man, we'd have starved to death. But Dayenu means you have to show your Hakaras HaTov for every little thing that you have. Which means on my own, you know, maybe I don't deserve it. But now that Hashem entrusted me with this and gave it to me, it doesn't mean I have to throw it away. You have to appreciate what you have, but you also have to show your appreciation to God for the blessings of life that you did receive. Right? And not say, well, I could have had more, or why did this happen? It's hard, very hard, but that's something we have to strive to try to focus on, each person on their own level. Pasuk Chavbeis, Alkein Gedalta Hashem Elokim. Alkein generally is translated as therefore, but here it's translated a little bit differently, because Alkein Gedalta Hashem Elokim, because you are so great and powerful. Ki'in kamocha v'in elokim zolatecha. There is no one like you. V'in elokim zolatecha. There is no one like other than you, God. B'chol asher shemanu ba'aznenu. Everything in which was heard in our ears. There's everything that we've experienced in our lives, and we've been around the block more than once. This is something which we can attest to, that there is no one as great as you. Umik amcha ki Yisrael goy echad ba'aretz. And who is like your nation, Yisrael, who is goy echad ba'aretz, one nation in this land. Asher holcho elokim liftos lo'am, that Hashem, elokim, God redeemed us as a nation. V'losum lo shame, and by you taking us out of Mitzrayim, you now establish a name for yourself, because until then we were suffering. There was always a God, we believed in God, but it didn't show God's majesty and power in this world until He actually redeemed us and freed us from Egypt. And you've done these great and wondrous things in your land, for the sake of your nation, Asher Padisa Lachem and Mitzrayim, which you redeemed from Egypt, Goyim Ve'elohav, from the nations and their gods, lowercase g. So we're looking at Rashi. Rashi tells us in Pasuk Chav Gimel, Asher Holchu Elohim is referring to Moshe and Aaron. Elohim does not only necessarily mean God, it could also mean His messengers. We also find that Dayanim, that judges, are also called Bedas Elokim, right, Elokim. They're also considered to be, because they're like Shluch HaShalom Kamoto, that a person who appoints an agent, and you're the principal, you can appoint an agent. That agent is just like you yourself, because they're acting on your stead. And therefore, Moshe and Aaron are considered also Asher Holchu Elokim. The Radak over here, which is the second very wide line, the last words on the line, quoting the words of Kohelis Rab, which is in parentheses, says, Asher holach Elohim, zeh HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Asher holach Elohim, zeh Moshe V'Aaron. So certainly it was Hashem that took us out of Mitzrayim, and He also utilized Moshe and Aharon as His messengers, as His agents to help us to be redeemed. But the focus of this pasuk is not Moshe and Aaron doing it, which we talked about on the first day of Pesach, that Moshe's name is not even really mentioned in the Haggadah at all, because no one should ever think it had anything to do with Moshe. It was God that was the one that took us out of Mitzrayim. It was based on His kindness to the Jewish people. And not that, just like any Kedai, just as David says that any Roy Lekach, that I am not, was not on the level, I didn't really deserve all the things that He's given me, so to the Jewish people, the Bnei Israel, when they left Mitzrayim, they were on the 49th level of impurity. They were all the way in the bottom. They were almost hit rock bottom. And the only reason why that they were redeemed is because of Hashem's chesed. It was not because we deserved it. It was above and beyond that which we really deserved. And that's the same thing when it comes to me. So therefore, he's drawing this parallel of the on a communal level, the way you treat all of the Jewish people, as well as the way that you treat the way that you treat me. Pasuk Chavdal. V'tachonin l'cha es amcha Yisrael, and you have established for yourself and for your nation Yisrael l'chol am ad olam, a nation ad olam, forever. V'yata Hashem and you Hashem ha'yisala hem l'elokim, and you have become a god for them. Now Hashem was always our god from the time that he created the world, but now that he's shown his interest in establishing a relationship with Klal Yisrael, that's something which we can relate to more. And this is one of the reasons why when it comes to Kiddush, we acknowledge, and through the Seres HaDibros as well, we say, Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim. So, wouldn't be a more momentous occasion at the time that he created the heavens and the earth, because we weren't there. And therefore, since even though that's an incredible thing that he did, he created the world, but it's something that we weren't there for, and that we can't really appreciate. We were there when it came to Mitzrayim, and not only that, but he did something which was a personal touch for us. He did something which showed that he cares about the Jewish people, and therefore that's something which we can relate to. And therefore, V'ata Hashem Oisa Lochem Elokim. At this point, now the Jewish people will take you as their God because they recognize your relationship and your interest in them. Pasuk Chavhei. V'ata Hashem Elokim, and now God, Hadavar Esher Dibarta El Avdecha, Vial Beso, that which you said to your servant, speaking humbly about himself. He's a king, yet he's calling himself an Eved. Vial Beso, in regard to my household, Hakim Ad Olam, you should establish forever. Ba'asei Ka'asher Divarti, you should do exactly as you have spoken, which is kind of difficult to understand because God promises something, he's going to do it, right? Obviously, Hashem already said that he's going to do. So why is it necessary v'asei kasher dibart? And he says, please do it. Well, of course he's going to do it. Why are you nagging God? Of course he's going to do it. The idea that's brought down, and we find this in numerous places, I'll share one other one in a moment, by Chana, is that even though you were promised something, even though Hashem says this is what will happen, Hashem still wants our tefillos. Hashem still wants us to ask for it. Hashem still wants us to speak to him and to continue the relationship, which is the continuous issue. On one hand, Hashem wants our tefillos. Hashem doesn't want us to be suffering, though, so that we have to continuously be asking him and begging him for things. But the reality is that once we get it, there's a very good chance that we're not going to have an interest in a relationship. Once I have it already, it's over. I'm happy, I'm comfortable, and therefore I don't need to ask for anything anymore. And therefore, V'yasei kasher dibarti means even though I know that that you're going to give it to me, Hashem still wants a relationship. Hashem still wants us to continue to pray and to have a connection with Him.
Is there also some commonality between that and Abraham when Hashem promised him that children would be like the stars of the sky? And then
that what?
He asked the question, but I don't have any children, how am I
going to... Oh, right.
Yeah, it
could be.
It's
that
it's
he's...
Yeah, I know. That Mitzrayim is the fulfillment of the great. And if you promise, and it has to be a
But what she's saying is that Abraham was told, but yet he still continued.
That would be a positive approach of his asking, which not everyone reads it that way, but that certainly could be. We also find this by Chana. When it came to Eli, when she was falsely accused of being an alcoholic, and he ended up giving her a bracha, that it says is very Shmuel Perek Aleph, which we don't have in front of us. It's a little bit before we're up to. Eli said that V'elokei Yisrael yitein es shilaseich asher sh'alt mi'imo, that God will give you and grant the request that you wish, which of course is specifically referring to having a child.
How long is it? 2 minutes?
No, but it also says in the English, Rabbi,
yeah,
that it's dependent in a way on whether or not the people are deserving of God's grace.
So, 25 on page 249.
So maybe he's praying that he needs his own.
Right.
The divine promise of beneficence is binding only as long as the beneficiary is deserving of God's grace.
True. Right. Look at that.
I mean, with that, so, you say you can't take it for granted. You have to do your
part. Right. I was going to say that immediately afterwards, Chana turns to Eli and says, "V'tomer timsa shivchatecha chein be'enecha." And Rashi said over there, "Lavakish le'rachman." You should daven for me that I should have a child. I mean, he was just promised he's going to have a child. She's going to have a child, but nonetheless, that's the idea. Okay, let's move on. Let's just finish this parak. We have a little bit over, but let's just quickly go through these last psukim. V'yigdal shimcha ad olam leimar Hashem Tzavaos Elokim, and that your name should continue to be glorified forever, Al Yisrael, upon the Jewish people. V'yis avdecha David yeh nochon lefanecha, and that the house of David, your servant, should remain firm before you. Pasuk of Zion, Ki ata Hashem Tzavaos Elokei Yisrael, Galisa es ozen avdecha, you God have revealed this to the ears of your servants, Lemor bayis evnelach, that you're going to build a house for me, which means my future, my children are going to continue. Al kein matzo avdecha es libo lispalo lelecha es atfil hazos, and therefore for this reason I am davening and saying this prayer to you. V'yata now Hashem Elokim, ata hu Elokim, you are our God. Udevarecha, you emes, your words are true. But to daber el avdecha es atova hazos, you have spoken to your servant this matter which is good. If we look, actually, let's just see this last pasuk, and we'll look at the English. We'll have to stop. Pasuk of tes, v'yata now ho el. The Sudestian translates as Ratz of the Chavetz, it is your will, Yuvarech es beis avdecha, to bless your servant. Liyos olam afanecha, should be always before you. Ki ata Hashem Elokim dibarta, that which you have spoken, and b'rechoscha Yuvarech, and your blessing should be blessed. Beis avdecha liolam, something should be forever. So look at the English over here on the bottom of page 250. It brings down the significance of this last part of his tefillah. He says, why does he pray to God to fulfill his promise to him? Because, as he explains in the next verse, which we just saw in the last pasuk, in Pasuk of Tes, that David is concerned that his future descendants may not be found worthy. Therefore, he prays that Hashem will overlook their shortcomings and let his blessings continue. So says the Abarbanel. The Rambam states that the ultimate reason for blessings in this world is to enable people to perform the commandments that will earn them a share in Olam Haba, the world to come. Thus, David prayed that Hashem's blessings should always continue so that the Jewish people would be able to serve Him better, even when the level of their service is lacking. Stop.